Good evening, everybody, and welcome to episode number 90 of the Weekly Wind Down. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
I am Georgia, the guest for the evening.
Yay! We were just talking about before we started recording how much wine 90 episodes encompasses. Like, seriously, how many gallons do you think between the three of us of wine we've consumed?
I'd rather not say.
I'm not comfortable with that answer. Oh God, is Stacy figuring it out?
Oh, no.
Please don't do that.
I will say I don't drink a whole bottle usually.
Oh my God, stop it.
But that's only I just don't because I don't eat enough food right before we record to.
Are you calling us leshes?
No, you've just been training longer than me.
Over 200,000 milliliters.
Oh God.
That means nothing to me.
200,000?
That's
a lot.
How many glasses is that?
Yeah.
So
many
glasses.
Milliliters in a glass. Let's go that way.
Well, if there's 750 milliliters in a bottle, and our glasses tend to be one glass is half a bottle. So that's like what, 9-10 glasses of wine we've drank?
1 liter is 1,000 milliliters, so 200,000 milliliters.
All right, let's just stop. All right, we drank a lot of wine.
Swimming pool for sure.
Well, 90, and if we each, let's just say hypothetically, we'll say 3 bottles a night, because if we have guests on, that balances out what I don't drink in a full bottle.
Me.
Oh, yeah. That's 270 bottles of wine.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Chris Bryant was taking shots, so.
That's true.
That does not surprise me.
That's our average a little.
Okay. Tonight, I am drinking Francis Coppola, The Diamond Collection, his Pinot Noir, 2016, and I love Francis Coppola wine.
I do too.
Yeah, it's so good. So I knew I was going to enjoy it. I've been looking forward to it all day since I was home with the 8-month-old, and it is everything I hoped it would be.
Good.
I am drinking Three Girls Pinot Noir. I picked it because
Dirty.
The three of us on the podcast. And it's bottled in Lodi, so it's local. So it's pretty good. It's not amazing. It tastes like a $10 bottle of wine. But I'm not going to dump it out. I mean, I'm not a quitter.
All right. I am drinking this Heritage Oak Rosé that we got when we were wine tasting.
Well, that's why it has a real cork. When you started getting fancy after 4 wineries, you started buying the expensive stuff.
This was like the first one we went to. Oh. So I actually remember getting it and tasting it. And it's pretty good. This was... I ate a handful of Junior Mints before we started this, and so I don't think I did myself any favors. So I don't think I'm getting the full experience, but I feel like after a couple drinks, I'll be good.
We'll check back in.
Okay. Yeah. I messed
Why would you drink? Why would you eat Junior Mints right before you got on here?
I didn't think about the wine, and I was like, "Hey, Junior Mints."
They're right. Doing all those like pairings with Girl Scout cookies and wine. So
I went to a tasting that was Girl Scout cookies and wine pairing. It was really amazing.
What's the best with thin mints?
Nothing went with the mints, but I can tell you that the lemon cookies with champagne was amazing.
That tracks.
Amazing.
That tracks.
Yeah,
I'm on board with that. Was it like the Savannah Smiles, like the powdered sugar lemon ones, or the real good lemonade ones that look like little? They don't have those cookies where I live, and I would go way off my diet for those lemonade cookies.
It was unbelievable.
See, now you can do it for the podcast.
Right? Yeah. Well, I'm embarrassed to say that I am not drinking wine tonight, but I have a reason. It's because I live in the Northeast and the weather is crazy, and I have taken a migraine pill every day this week.
Ugh.
And I have to be careful with the wine if I'm getting migraines. It's not – the trigger for me is basically the barometric pressure, but the wine doesn't help. So I am actually drinking – whiskey is fine, however. So
oh, okay. I was like, oh, great, another water drinker.
No, Crown Apple and diet.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. Crown Apple?
Interesting.
I have not had that. That sounds good.
Oh.
Interesting. I'm
a
big fan of
that. Oh, you have the little bottles. See, I went to BevMo trying to find the little bottles because we were going to try, I don't even remember what it was. It was like Crown Apple and Fireball, I think it was, to make, cinnamon apple. And we can't find the little tiny bottles.
I have a big bottle and then I have the little bottles. So
interesting.
Yeah. Lucky.
But okay. I have a Pinot Noir that I really want to try at some point. It's new and it's called Gothic. Oh, something that starts with an N. Like, and it's got like a Nevermore. Gothic Nevermore is called. It's a Pinot Noir.
Is that one we haven't done?
I don't know. One that I've never had before. It got a really good review from Wine Spectator, so I grabbed it. But I didn't want to open it tonight if I didn't feel
for
like
sure. Right. So yeah.
I'll read
it's probably over like $12, so we haven't reviewed it yet.
Sounds like a raven. I like it.
It has a raven on it, yes.
I'm telling you, in your next life, you should just design wine, like wine labels.
Yeah. Totally.
You'd be really good at it, Stacey.
That's the dream.
Okay, so we got a ton of listener questions for Georgia, so we are going to stop our little chit-chatting, and we will get right into it. Georgia, you have, 25 books out now?
I just signed a contract for my 25th.
That's
my
crazy.
My 24th is being edited now, so the 23rd is about to come out. Wait. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure you lose track after a while. So why don't you tell us about your newest release, The Do-Over?
The Do-Over is a second chance romance. It's about two women who actually went to high school together, one of whom was kind of bullied and shy and introverted and didn't garner much attention. The other was very popular in school, the stereotypical cheerleader. 15 years goes by and they run into each other again, but only one of them recognizes the other. And the bullied one she's reinvented herself. She's grown into her own identity and she's happy with what she's doing. And she's not happy that the bane of her high school existence has come back into her life. But because the cheerleader doesn't remember who she is, they kind of start a friendship that blossoms into something else. And they have the whole undercurrent of a lie, basically, through the book.
Interesting. So she doesn't give it away right off the bat that she knows who
she does not.
Ooh. Interesting.
That is interesting.
I hope so.
Okay. Well, yeah, you have my attention.
Good.
Okay, so we will we'll start with a softball for you. So, okay. Christy wanted to know, how did you start your writing career?
Oh, I started my writing career because I read a lesbian romance novel like 20 years ago that was awful. Awful. Oh, I'm going to poke my eyes out.
Who was it by? No, I'm just kidding. Don't say anything.
I'm not going to remember. If I did, I would not tell you.
Right. Don't.
But I finished it and I was so angry that it was as bad as it was. And my, girlfriend at the time said to me, well, what is the difference between that author and you? And I said, she wrote a book. And she was like, yeah, so maybe you should try that if you think you can do a better job. And so I did. And I got lucky enough in my timing that I kind of got in on the ground floor of the lesbian presses all starting up. And my first manuscript was accepted right away. So that was kind of cool. And I've been writing ever since.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah. We're jumping.
Do you want to do another softball one? No. We'll wait till she has a couple more sips of her alcohol. Yeah.
Okay. You want me to pick another one?
Yeah, pick an easy one.
If you could have a one-night stand with any of your characters, who would it be and why?
It would be Elena from Starting from Scratch, because I firmly believe she is the sexiest character I have ever written. I don't know why. But I can see her so clearly in my head. And yeah, it would be her.
Interesting.
Okay. Okay.
And so you knew that like right away. You didn't even have to think about that.
Know,
like that was, that was like,
I've had that question before.
All right. So Jennifer wants to know, what's the funniest typo you've ever made?
The funniest typo. That is a really good question. I don't have a funny one. I don't think I have one.
I feel like, does this Jennifer person know something? Did you find one? Let us know.
That's what I love, but you know, I'm also not a spring chicken and my memory sucks. So maybe.
No, I'm
actually a really good typer, so I don't have a lot of typos.
I've had times where I'm writing and I go back and read it the next day and I'm like, what the hell was I doing? Like, what? I don't even know what's going on here. And I have to like delete an entire page or two because I'm like, woo! I don't even think I was writing the right book. Okay. Let's see here. Deb wants to know, is there a reason you write happy for now and not happily ever after?
I don't think that is always the case at all. I think I do write some happily ever after, but I think that happy for now leaves something to the imagination. I guess there's something to be said for wrapping it all up in a big red bow, but I also have faith in my readers that they can take it and run with it and go in whatever direction they want. I think as long as I give them the possibility of happy, you know, they're probably going to be happy, then I think that's good.
Well, it's more realistic too, yeah, right?
Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
Everybody's happy all the time, always.
Right. I agree with that.
I've never really thought about that.
Yeah.
Though. Happy for now.
I like that.
Now I'm going to read books differently.
The rule for romance is that it has to have a optimistic or emotionally satisfying ending. So they don't have to end up together, but it has to leave your reader feeling good. So that generally means they'll end up together, but it doesn't mean they have to get married. You know?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I never knew that. Okay. Sarah says, why don't you write sequels? I'd love to see one for Blend.
I get a lot of requests for sequels. My thing is once I'm done with that couple, I'm kind of done. And I feel like with a romance, the tension and all of the angst comes from how they get together. And once they're together, then that's over. That part is done. So I know a lot of people have done sequels to romances and have done them very well, but I don't know that it would work for me. I could take a secondary character from a book and do a sequel that way. And that's kind of what the series is when I did the Puppy Love series. But I don't know that I would write a sequel with the same couple. I don't know if I could.
It's hard.
Yeah. Have you done it?
Well, I mean, I always take I'm finishing up one series right now and then I've started another one, but you have to take the secondary character. I mean, my main characters from the first one are in it, but then they have supporting characters from the first one. Right. Yeah. You have to. It's otherwise you're happily ever after or happy for now didn't make sense if you're
exactly,
and people don't want to read about a couple that they're happy with that are now going to go back through some other type of whatever turmoil
especially
or angst.
Your readers have invested in that first book and they invested in these characters and they want them together, so you can't then write a sequel and rip them apart. Or I mean, you can, but you know.
Yeah, interesting.
Not in romance anyway. People get real worked up.
Right.
All right, Stace.
Are we like getting into it now?
Go ahead.
All right, good.
Do you want to take another sip? Yeah.
Yeah, get in there. Okay, let's see. So, all right. Melanie wants to know if you think there's always one person who's more in control during sex. Like, do you truly believe there are tops and bottoms?
Is this about writing or about life?
She didn't specify.
No, I don't believe that one person is in control all the time. I think in a good relationship, it goes back and forth.
Yeah, I feel like that would be super boring.
Yeah. Okay. So this one, Stevie says, I'm pansexual and in a poly relationship with two women and one trans man. Would you ever consider writing a book with this dynamic? I find this to be one of the areas most untouched by authors. Why is that?
I think that there is always the worry that you're not going to do it justice. If I'm not in a poly relationship, I don't know if I could write one, which doesn't mean that I couldn't. I mean, that's like saying I couldn't write a male character, because of course I could. But I also think that there is something about honoring that. We have such a small community and we are so overlooked by so many people that I think there's a fear of not doing it right. I'm not against doing it at all. I'm not against writing something like that. But it would take some courage and a hell of a lot of research. So maybe at some point.
Yeah, you don't want to, because there's so few out there, you don't want to disappoint the people that are in those relations. I mean, you hear it all the time. Yes, you can write vampires even though you're not a vampire, but who are you really disappointing if you don't do it right? Like someone's like, I didn't like the way she bit them. And you're like, cool.
Yeah, obviously. Stop.
But I think there is a lot of pressure, especially for like in the trans community, that you want to do them justice and service. You don't want to embarrass them or yourself or anything. So
exactly.
That would be really hard to do.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Mary wants to know, which one of your books is most personal? Like, which one most closely represents something that happened in your life?
That's a good question. There's a little bit of me and a little bit of my life in all of them, if I'm going to be honest. I would say probably Olive Oil and White Bread hits closest to home, because it's about a long-term relationship. And I had a 22-year marriage that ended not too long ago. So that one's probably the one that hits closest to home. But there are little bits and pieces of my life in pretty much every one of the books and every one of the characters. It's not even intentional all the time. I don't sit down and go, well, you know, this happened to me, so let me write about it. But it happens. And sometimes I don't notice. My dog is talking to me. Sometimes I don't notice until I go back and I do a read through, and then I'm like, oh, that's familiar. You know, so it's not intentional.
Oh, I worked that out on paper, didn't I?
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes you have to fix that. It's like, no, delete, 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 delete.
It makes sense, though. You write what you know. Yeah. So you know what it feels like to go through a breakup, or you know, that type of stuff. So it totally makes sense.
Unless you're writing vampires.
Right.
And we can always circle back.
All right. So Cleo says that I fought my sexual orientation for most of my life. When I finally came out, it was like a light went on and I became much more adventurous in bed. I wanted to try everything. I assume that's what it's like for most people. Do you feel a responsibility in your writing to characters who felt like that?
Well, I think every character is different. I don't know that I've written a ton of coming out characters because my characters tend to be a little bit older. But I've written a couple, and I try to be as authentic as I can when writing about something like that. That's an interesting point, though, that she said that she became more adventurous in bed. I never really thought of that before, but it makes perfect sense.
That, yeah, like, you're more into
you're
it.
You're more comfortable with yourself. So now you're like, right. Hey, let's try this.
Keep those lights on.
Yeah.
Okay, so this one is from Carol. She said, some authors write multiple sex scenes throughout a romance, but some only write one or two. I found that your recent works have only had one or two scenes between the main characters. What, if anything, makes you decide that? Do you feel like one sex scene is enough?
I feel like the first sex scene is the most important most of the time. I mean, obviously it depends on the story, and you can have a point where you can have a story where the characters meet, you know, early on and have a thing, and you know, that's different. But for me, I think that first love scene, when they realize that they have feelings for each other, is the most important one. And then I will have a follow-up scene, a second scene, or maybe a third, but it's less detailed. It's a little less intimate. Might be a little rawer, you know what I mean? Because I think that all the intimacy is in that first one. I have read romances where I think there's too much sex, and I'm not a prude by any stretch of the imagination. I enjoy a good love scene, but I think that you can have too much sex in your book.
Totally.
So I try to find a balance there, and it changes from book to book, but I generally have one big major love scene and then usually a second one, sometimes a third. I also think that the first kiss is almost as important as the first love scene. I actually almost like the first kiss better.
You also don't want it to feel forced, right? Like, if you're just writing in sex scenes that don't make any sense in the story, like, people have lives. Right, people have to go to work. God.
Especially in some of the, you know, where, like, romantic intrigue, where they're, like, running for their lives, but they stop to fuck.
Right.
Right.
You don't have time. People are shooting at you. Run.
I've actually had people write, because I write intrigue and, you know, military and stuff like that. And I've had people actually email me and say, I don't have enough sex in my books. And I'm like, they're chasing a terrorist. Like, what do you want? I work it in when I can work it in. Yeah. Like, if you don't do it at the right time, it feels fake. And that's the last thing you want for your characters is for it to feel fake. Like, I can recommend some other authors that you would probably like much more that don't, you know, that you'll get to see that a lot more of.
It's weird in movies too, I feel like. I feel like it happens in movies a lot.
Yes.
Where you're like, what are you, stop.
There's like the time for this.
Right? There's a burglar breaking into your house right now and you're not running out the door. You're stopping. Right.
That's why I couldn't get into The Walking Dead. I was like, dude, you're being chased by zombies and you're going to take time out to cheat on your husband with this guy who hasn't showered in 3 months. And, you know, damn fact, hasn't brushed his teeth. Like, no, I can't. And you're just going to say you romped in the forest. Like, first of all, that's disgusting.
Yes. Thank you. Let's talk about sometimes these sex scenes happen where, like, in locations where I can guarantee you, I would be like, no, I'm not happy. Not trying to dig twigs and shit out of place. Like, it's just no. And yeah, these people haven't showered. There's no time. There's no resources. Like,
like beach sex scenes. You're like, really? In the sand?
Yeah.
That sounds like a
huge, and it's always super disappointing when you actually have sex on the beach because you're like, this didn't live up to the hype. I am washing sand out of my ass for weeks. The other one I don't like is in movies, especially when they like start totally going at it first thing in the morning. I'm like, you need to brush your teeth. Or at least turn your heads away. You are not making out first thing in the, at least cock your head to the side, you dumb dumbs. That's disgusting.
Right. And get up and go pee first. Hello.
For sure.
We
should make a movie.
Yeah.
All right, Stace.
All right. Our last one is from Fiona Riley. She says, G Money. What's a TV show or movie that you love that people might not expect? Oh, she's got two questions. So there's one.
I love the Holiday Baking Championship on the Food Network.
Yeah.
I watch it all the time. Oh, and there's a holiday one, and there's a spring one, and there's a fall one, and I watch them all.
I would not expect that. You're right. Yeah. Okay.
And then she says,
I also watched The Bachelor.
Yeah.
I've never seen an episode.
There you go, Stacey. Finally somebody that watches it.
So you guys are the two people that watch it.
I watch it with Melissa Braden. We watch it together.
Ugh, I can't get into it.
It's so funny.
It is. And it's not anything I ever thought that I would watch, but I really do kind of enjoy it.
Do you do the fantasy league?
No, but I immediately.
I'm sorry. The what?
They have like a bachelor fantasy league, and so before, I don't know, the day before the episode or whatever, you go in and guess like who's gonna cry, and you know how many times did their alone time get interrupted, and like
that. Oh my god, that's awesome.
Kind of funny, yeah.
I bet
it's like a drinking game.
It is totally. That's what that whole empire is.
Interesting.
Okay, so the second part of her question, she says, and G-Eazy, it's no secret that one of my favorite things to do is try to make you blush when you moderate the sex panel during Women's Week. What's the most embarrassed you've ever been in public professionally, whether it be reading your own work or being there while someone else reads theirs? Details, please, and thank you.
I don't know that it was embarrassment so much as, I mean, I don't really get embarrassed. I blush. And I'm, like I said earlier, I'm not a prude by any stretch of the imagination, but I also am not as vocal as some of my fellow writers on panels and stuff about certain things. But I can say that when I did an audiobook for one of my books, and I narrated it myself. And we did a panel in Women's Week and played an excerpt from it. So it was like really the first time that I had heard my own narration in front of people. And I could just feel the red come up from my neck. So there's a lot of blushing around that. That was not necessarily embarrassment, but just discomfort.
Yeah, I get that. To hear yourself.
It really is. Because you don't sound like you do in your head.
No. Yeah, no. Like, that's not me. That's not what I sound like.
I was a communications major, and I we had a radio station at my college, and I was on the radio a lot, and I would record my shows for my father, and then he would play them back, and I'd be like, I don't sound like that, do I? Is that really what I sound like? Wow, ew.
Same thing. Anytime I play this podcast, in my mind, I have a really low, deep voice. But then... And I start to listen to it, and I'm like, I sound like Minnie Mouse. Like, I don't think I sound like
Who
that.
Who told you like, that life, you have I a really sound, deep voice?
I think I sound like Kathleen Turner.
She told her that she has one.
I'm sorry, you think you sound like Kathleen Turner?
Yes.
What?
Like, I think that's how I hear it. I hear it that low.
I hear my own voice in my head low, too.
Okay.
And then I listen to the podcast and I'm like, I really sound like that?
Every time I get in the car and my wife's playing it, I'm like, turn it off. Turn it off. I don't want to listen to us. Okay. This one is actually for all of us. And this listener said that they wanted to remain anonymous. So it says, I'm bi and have been in a relationship with the same man for about a year. I want him to do certain things in bed, but he says he doesn't want to because they're things women do in bed, which I've tried explaining isn't all that different from straight sex. He says that it makes him feel inferior when I ask him because he thinks it's because I miss having sex with women. This just isn't true. I love him. I've loved women, yes, but this doesn't mean I want to be with someone besides him. How do I make him see that these are just things I like and aren't a reflection of his manhood? Am I just supposed to worry about his ego? I'm 33 years old and I know what I like. Should I feel guilty for that? If I can't get him to do these things, should I even stay with him? I'm not okay with just having an okay sex life.
So many things. I don't understand people, and maybe because I've never been in that situation, but I don't understand people that won't do minor things for their lover in bed. If it's something painful or something that, I mean, just completely turns you off, like, okay. But, you know, like, I had a friend that her husband wouldn't allow any toys in the bedroom ever whatsoever, like, close-minded. And she was very into that. And so he was like, no, I think you'll like the toys more than you'll like me. And it totally, like, it was hard on their sex life. So I feel like I don't understand people that close down certain things. If it's not hurting you, I mean, do it for your
partner. Or at least try. If they're being open and honest enough to tell you, like, what they're, don't you want them to?
I was going to say, don't you want your partner to have a great time with you?
Right.
So you want to kind of blow their mind in bed. So whatever works for them, just do it.
Plus, what could she possibly want to try that would be considered like not something that like a straight couple would have, in there
going down on her, right?
Right. That's what I thought
too.
How
is that not something that a straight couple would partake in? That's
here's what I'm going to say. I think it's
off the table.
I actually think that this is probably a deeper seated issue for your boyfriend. If he's saying that the idea of doing something that resembles something you've had in past relationships with someone of the same sex intimidates him, your entire sexuality probably intimidates him. And that's a much deeper issue that I don't like giving advice like this because I don't know you, but that may be make or break in your relationship. If you're confident in your sexuality and you are bisexual and, you know, that is who you are, which I believe that is, you're going to have to take a deeper look at this relationship in general because he may not fully accept you for who you are. That's how I read it. And we don't have all the information sitting here, but if he's telling you it makes him feel inferior, that's a much deeper issue than whether or not he'll go down on you or whatever it is that you've requested of this person you've been in an intimate relationship with for a year. That's my feeling on it. It goes beyond the sex.
With that.
Yep, totally agree.
Because,
and if you're questioning saying, should I even stay with him then? I feel like it's already in your brain that you're kind of on the verge of.
Yep. Right, you wouldn't have that thought unless you were already.
That's even an option.
Here's the thing about sex. It does not make a break a relationship, but it is always the first indicator of something is bad or good. Okay? Mm-hmm. Like if you have a healthy, and I'm not saying that means you're having sex 6 times a week. Like for some couples, it's 4 times a month. For some couples, it's 4 times a week. It's whatever is healthy and feels right for you guys. But if that drastically changes or your needs aren't being met, there's another issue within your relationship that has zero to do with the actual sex. Someone is feeling less than.
Yeah. Well, and it's one thing to not have your needs met, and it's another thing to tell somebody what they could do to meet your needs and then to have them sort of, you know,
say no.
Well, it's selfish, right? Like to say, this is what I would like for you to do. And you being like, no, that hurts my ego. I'm not comfortable doing that.
Right.
Or, you know, no, it's against my religion or whatever. Activity. He's just being kind of a dick.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. You going down on him.
Oh. Yeah.
Maybe that well has dried up now.
Yeah, so I guess my advice would be you probably need to have a deeper conversation with him about the actual state of how he feels about you as a person and your sexual identity than it mattered than what's actually going on in your sex life. I wish I could say just blow his mind with these 10 hot tips to keep your man, but that's just, that's not how it's going down. Get it? Womp, womp.
Womp, womp.
All right. We actually got, Georgia's very efficient. Okay. We got through those fast. Okay. So we gave everyone a little bit of homework and one, who doesn't like watching Jennifer Lawrence? I could watch Jennifer Lawrence do anything, literally anything.
Yes.
But then when she started talking politics, I was like, oh. And this this video, what we posted it on our Facebook page already, but what were your guys' first impressions, I guess, of what she had to say?
I started watching it and immediately agreed that our system is broken.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I started to glaze over and lose interest in the middle, and then she brought me back around, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, she had my full attention that it's something that is fixable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like, oh, let me tell you about how it's broken. Okay, bye. You know, she explained it.
Right.
Which is what I was expecting.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I had the same reaction you did. I don't love politics, and a lot of it confuses me.
Me too.
She sucked me right in. And then, like you said, about halfway through, I moved my cursor to see how much time was left.
Me too.
And I was like, okay, because it made sense. I mean, it was well explained. It was, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it was done so that someone like me who doesn't really get politics understood what she was saying. Also super friggin' depressing. Yeah. Just to see what a mess, I mean, we know, but to see it in charts and graphs is just depressing.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a little bit of hope there. I hope.
Yeah,
I hope
it also kind of solidified. She said, you know, this is why a lot of young people go,
yes,
I don't need to vote because my opinion doesn't matter. You know, it's not going to make a difference. And when she was showing the graphs, I thought, this is exactly why I feel that way, you know? Mm-hmm.
I think that I hope that people aren't turned off by her celebrity and that they actually give that video a listen. Cause I think she made a lot of really good points in there. And I think the fact that she is not just that she has a lot of notoriety, but the fact that she's someone who, when she talks, I feel like it's really approachable and accessible and stuff. So I feel like for someone who's not super into politics, cause I didn't glance at the time once.
Me either.
I was, like, super into it the whole time. I think that it's very accessible to people who aren't super into politics. And you're right that it was a little depressing, but I think that's just because our current political climate is depressing.
It's depressing.
Yeah, but I thought it was just really hopeful about the fact that it can be fixed. And here's the things that we can do. And getting young people to vote is like one of the biggest things. Like a lot of, I was going to say, I don't want to generalize, but that's stupid because that's what we've been doing for the last 90 episodes. I feel like a lot of conservatives don't want young, moderate and liberal people are what's going to change that climate there. So yes. Trying to get young people to vote is not on the top of everybody's like to-do list going into the next, especially the next presidential election. So I feel like that's really, really important is that, yeah, if we keep going on, and especially young people keep not voting because they think their vote doesn't count, then it's not going to.
Right. Yeah.
And I just thought that was a really good point. Like they have to vote.
Well, I'm going to rain on everyone's parade. I have always been in favor of ranked choice voting. It works really well in California. It means that you could get independents on the ballot if you want. It means you could get, you know, it's whoever you like in the state the best or in the country. It's not broken down by, you know, party affiliation or whatever. You get to vote for who you want in office. I mean, it's a little bit different in what she's describing because you vote like choices 1 through 5. So I'm also a huge proponent of take private money out of campaign finance. Like that is such an important piece that I think gets glossed over and we don't talk about enough. Why? Because it's fucking boring. No one wants to talk about it. As soon as I say campaign finance, I see like Stacey's eyes go foo foo. Like she's checked out. Like, but if you did the voucher system, people would actually they'd be invested then because the politicians would actually have to be speaking to the voters directly and not speaking subliminally to like big pharma, big oil and all these other companies, because you would actually have to affect the direct lives of Americans that you're talking to. I love all of it. I wish we could bring it to fruition. Here's the problem, though. if you look back, like Mitch McConnell, who is, he's the head of the Senate, okay? He has built his entire career off saying, no, you should take the limits off giving money. You know, big pharma should be able to donate $20 billion to us. I'm making up a number. I don't know if Mitch McConnell's ever actually said that, but you should be able to give $20 billion to whoever you want. They're more focused on creating generational wealth for themselves and for the people that they work for than they ever have been in the American people. And I'm not saying there's not Democrats that feel like that too. There probably is. For whatever reason, it's much more obvious in the Republican Party, probably because they don't try to hide it. Like they're perfectly fine saying, yeah, I take $1 million from NRA. So what? And I'm going to sit up here on the stump and I'm going to pump all of their viewpoints across and I'm going to make it the gospel truth. Same thing with oil. Why do you think we haven't turned to green energy when everybody else in the world is leading the way in green energy? Like China is kicking our ass with green energy. It's because big oil is paying off our politicians who care more about giving money, inheriting money down the family line than they give a shit about clean water or clean air. They just don't care. Yeah. So if we could bring all these things and make it a reality, would that work? Of course it would work, but you're working against a propaganda machine that we've already seen them say, John already believes that everything is a pie. And if Jose gets a small piece of that pie, John's family is going to lose out on wealth, on access to education, on access to jobs. Yeah. That is what they spin to the American people. So you have individuals who are living paycheck to paycheck, working 90 hours a week. They're not able to afford, you know, even 2 cars in their household. Someone's taking public transportation for reasons other than green energy. Their kids can't be in child. Like they're facing real issues every single day. And the Republicans have told them, if you vote for us, we're going to break you off a little bit of piece of our wealth because we're going to push the black and brown people out of here. And that's who's taking your jobs. Well, that's not who's taking your jobs. Robots are taking your jobs, you dum-dums. Mm-hmm. Robots. Like your jobs aren't going overseas. They're in the plants. There's just little mechanical arms that are doing what you used to do. So
speaking of, watch the last episode of Last Week Tonight that John Oliver did about automation.
So I just don't think it's going we won't be able to do something like this until people are really honest about the current state of politics in America and honest about the state of the political parties in America.
Well, and participating.
And participating. Now, if I think you could actually get this out to people for everyone to actually see and watch, because what was the biggest number of the election? 104 million people didn't vote in the last election. Yeah. Like that, they won, you know?
Yeah.
And we also have a major issue with state-run TV. Fox News is state-run TV. It is. Like, it just is. And they're able to spin anything and everything the way they want it. I guess I don't have any faith in the real message getting out, because as soon as you see a celebrity attached to it, people think it's liberal. Right. You know, as soon as you see it on something like No Labels, people think it's liberal. And there's nothing Republicans like more than liberal tears. Yeah. So they'll immediately turn their brains off to it and not realize that it would actually benefit them, because they could vote. If your state put up three Republicans for governor, you'll get to pick from three different Republicans. It's whatever best for your state. Like they just don't see how it benefits them, because they've been led to believe that anything that doesn't affiliate with their party is going to steal from them and their families.
Right. That's what I said. I hope that people don't just automatically sort of tune her out because of her notoriety. Cause I think she made a lot of really good points.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, yeah. And they're based in fact, like what was the one? Right. There's only a 30% chance that anything gets passed. That's disgusting.
I know.
Get your shit together, Congress. Right. What are you doing?
Literally getting paid to do.
I can't even imagine if I handed in my manuscript to my publisher and was like, it's 30% done. Cool.
Right.
They'd be like, no. No, you're not getting paid, and don't bother submitting anything to us ever again. And you know what? They should. So why don't we fire these dum-dums in office that are only passing things 30% of the time, regardless of how overwhelming something is supported? Like that's insane to me.
So don't vote for them anymore, because literally their whole job is to represent their electorate, not to represent their own feelings. And
well, this is why they hate AOC so much, right?
I know.
Because, and like her or hate her, like I've said on here before, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a little bit too far left for me. But I think she's important, because I do think she does her best to represent the people she's actually trying to represent, and she doesn't give a shit about anybody's money. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would vote for her for president, but I do like how much she makes them squirm. Like, I love that.
Perfect. That's the point. Needs to be represented, because there are a lot of especially young democratic socialists.
Well, socialist gets a bad rap too, but that's an entirely different episode.
And it's not socialism, it's democratic socialism, so you're welcome for your military and
police, fire, and police and streets, and you know all of that. Uh-huh. I just think that we have an issue with the truth in this country. And we've said on here before, people are starting, we're not even starting from the same starting point anymore. Like, people who only watch Fox News are starting out a conversation and a debate and a voting cycle with a completely different set of facts than people who watch and read other news sources. Mm-hmm. And until we can eliminate kind of that and have a real conversation about ideas and policy and beliefs and regulations, something like this, as wonderful as it sounds and as hopeful as it, you know, makes me that it's even being discussed, because I think that's great. Right. I just don't think it will happen until we can actually have a conversation that isn't void of the truth. Sad. But I will.
I know.
I'll watch J-Law do anything.
Fall down, anything.
Eat soup.
Read the phone book, whatever. Like my grandma used to say, well, she'd say he, but she can eat cookies in my bed.
my grandma says she wouldn't kick him out of bed for eating crackers.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. But yeah, you would, because that's gross.
It's gross.
Yeah, crackers? No. All right.
Yeah.
What's everyone watching this week?
I watched the Abducted in Plain Sight documentary.
Oh my God.
You two should just hang out like that.
It can't get any worse. They it can't get any worse.
That was horrifying.
Horrifying. Disgusting. There's so many. I can't even. So I want to dedicate like a good 20 minutes about it on maybe the next episode or the one after that, because I have so many thoughts and everybody needs to watch it. And we all need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because holy shit. And for our listeners too, if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it. And then
we'll what's talk it about on? Next
week. It's, there aren't even words.
Yep.
Is it Netflix?
I have told so many people to watch it. I've recommended it to so many people, and I can tell when they watch it because I start to get the same stream of texts from each person. They're always the same. They're always, you know, WTF and oh my God. And this,
yep.
What's it about?
I thought, like, okay,
I don't even want to tell you. That's what
you just gotta go watch it.
Have to watch
and
it.
Know that these are the dumbest.
Watch it.
These are the dumbest parents ever. I went in, people were posting memes about like the dad in the armchair. And I'm going, who is this guy? Like, I don't understand these memes. I'm usually the meme queen. Right, and so I watch it, and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out what these memes are about. And now I'm like, oh my God, really? Holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Jax, you have to watch it.
So it's a yay, not a nay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, everybody needs to
go watch
it.
Well, it's a nay on everything they did to handle the situation.
Right.
But it's a yay on the documentary.
But you need to go watch it, because the conversation that we have to have is not only the what the fuck factor of the show itself, but also about religion. We got to talk about religion.
I'm in. You had me at religion. Churches. You had me.
Churches not punishing people and making them go to therapy in the church and not calling the cops on people.
Right.
Hello, Duggars.
I was just going to say that.
So many aspects that you need to watch it tonight so that we can talk about it.
Well, I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to watch it tonight. It's 3 hours later here, but I will do my best to watch it. Be a team player, goddamn it.
Leaving Neverland, anybody?
Oh, that's
mine.
I haven't watched it yet because I just wrapped a show last night, and so I went to watch it today. This is how lazy I was today. I wasn't logged into my HBO Now account, and I was like, oh. Well, I don't remember the password. So then instead, I watched the Oprah interview with the two guys and the guy who made the movie and stuff. First of all, you guys have to understand, Wade Robson is, for somebody my age, a big deal in the dance community.
Absolutely.
And how you say my age, we're 100 years older than you. No, you're, 3 years younger than us.
Right.
Didn't grow up in the dance community is what I'm
saying.
That's
true. That's true.
Maybe I did.
If you were in sort of early to mid 30s and you grew up going to conventions and stuff in that time, Wade Robson was a big deal. He even sang a little bit on.
All right, go on with your story. We get it. He's a big deal.
You have to watch the documentary and then watch the Oprah talking about the documentary.
No.
No? It wasn't weird. It wasn't.
No, because I know the details, when the whole Michael Jackson thing was happening, I think everybody kind of thought, as much as Wade says nothing happened and nothing went on or whatever, I think everybody kind of knew that, but probably it did. So I haven't watched the full documentary yet, but I think that's another one we're going to have to talk about because it's an interesting phenomenon with something like that, I'll use the example of my studio. There's posters of Michael Jackson all over the walls in my studio, and I feel really weird about it. I don't like it. I don't think it's a good image to project onto kids that we have, there's a lot of evidence against him. And the reasons I think are sort of, inconsequential, in that context. I really do think, much like with R. Kelly, I do think that people who are abused when they're younger then turn out to be abusers. That's just science. So I do think there's some weird stuff with Michael Jackson that influenced his behavior, but not an excuse and definitely not, I just think it's interesting how his level of celebrity that once he died, it was okay, we're not going to talk about it and we're not going to.
Well, that's
whatever.
What I was going to say, I had a friend text me and say, I'm so frustrated that this has come out because now all these memes and videos and things are coming out talking about it. And he's not here to defend himself. So it's not fair. This should have come out after he died. And I'm like,
well,
I don't know.
And I think they probably talked about a lot of it in the documentary, but I think there's a lot of victim shaming that goes into it too. Like, well, there must be liars because they said nothing ever happened. Like, that's not how any of this works.
It wasn't.
If you watch the documentary, it's really clear why they lied.
Yeah.
Well, as much as they were groomed. Yes.
Well, not just that. They believe, they truly, but what I found fascinating about the documentary, and I'm not an expert in pedophilia or anything, but I've watched enough documentaries and I've read enough things. They weren't scared of him. They were in love with him.
Yes.
And that was such an interesting, and I think to a certain point, I think Michael Jackson believed he was in love with them too. Yes. He was broken, and I'm not making excuses for anything that he did, but he had this kind of weird, still being trapped at like their age, but he was a grown man with grown man hormones and impulses. And he 100% took advantage of those kids and he abused them. And I'm not saying anything differently, but it's unlike any abuse case I've ever seen where I truly believe in his own way, his own sick, fucked up way that nobody should ever have to endure, he was in love with those boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was gross.
He grew the family. He grew the entire family. It wasn't even just the boys. It was all of them. I mean, you know, you can blame the parents, but I almost got it.
Mm-hmm.
The mother, Wade Robson's mother is not remotely close to the mother in Abducted in Plain Sight. Two completely different women. And while I do believe that she needs to shoulder some of the responsibility, I do not blame her.
Yeah.
Because he was a master.
Right.
At
because as much as you have that sort of persona, and I get it, it's really interesting because then once I watched this, because I watched it on YouTube, the next thing that came up was an interview with Lisa Marie Presley and Diane Sawyer from after they had already been divorced. And she basically, she said, which I totally believe, because Diane Sawyer was questioning her, like, were you really in a relationship, like a sexual relationship with Michael Jackson? And what she said was like, yeah, because that persona of being this like meek, shy kind of young person is not who he is. He's this other person. So it was like, I could see that because I couldn't see someone like Lisa Marie Presley being attracted to somebody who acts like they're a 10-year-old boy.
Right.
It's that thing. But I mean, it's so convoluted and complex.
He acted like a 10-year-old boy around these families and around these other boys. Mm-hmm. He was
like,
broken.
You hear Lisa Marie Presley talk about it and you're like, yeah, there's no way he could have acted like that. And then you would have been like sexually attracted to him actually acting like a 10-year-old boy. It just doesn't make sense. But the one thing that I really got from this interview that Oprah pointed out, because she had been abused when she was younger, was the term abuse. And she said, you know, she said when it's someone you trust and it's someone you love and they're doing something to you that physically feels good, you don't think that that's abuse. And she literally said, if someone is rubbing your penis as an 8-year-old boy, that's going to feel good to you. Mm-hmm. So when someone asks you, did they do something bad to you or were you abused or whatever? Like, no, because it felt good. And that's what Wade said. Like, right. How do you tell people that what he's doing to you feels good? Like, I mean, it's a whole, I was really happy. I really like Oprah.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, you know, for her to step out, especially like in the Black community against Michael Jackson and sort of say, hey, this is the deal.
Right.
There's a lot going on with that because most of the victims were white. And so there's this big like racial divide in the whole story too. And for her to say, she was like, you guys are going to get hate. I'm going to get hate. But as somebody that was like sexually abused when she was younger, I thought that was such a huge point to make. Like it's true because you, like physically, it's not the same as being thrown up against a wall and raped. It's just a very different, very different, very confusing situation.
Well, you see it. It's the same reason that, you know, you hear about wives that stay with their, or partners that stay with their significant other. And you go, why you've been abused for 15 years. And the lines get so blurred when it's someone that you love. And they continuously tell you, this is me showing you that I love you.
Right.
This is our special thing. Like this is how I express my love for you. And especially as a child, how do you differentiate that? Like, And I agree with you, Georgia. I fully went in expecting to be mad at the parents for mm-hmm. letting this happen. And I felt sorry for them. I didn't feel anger or hate towards them. I thought, my God, you were completely fooled by him also.
Exactly.
And you're all victims. I mean, the boys obviously they're much bigger victims than the parents were, but yep. I'm sure the guilt the parents have now knowing they allowed mm-hmm. that to happen to their kids. Yep. Yep, and not only that, brought their kids to him, mm-hmm. pretty much served them up and said, sure, he can stay with you. Sure. You can help him with his career. Sure. Like he can spend the night in your room with you, which when I first read about it, because I've always thought Michael Jackson was guilty.
Yeah.
God, you need to watch Abducted in Plain Sight.
But I'm like, I've always been like, why would you let a child sleep in a room with a 30-year-old man? But when they explained, like, he was like a little boy to them.
Right.
They would listen at the door and they were playing
story bedroom.
Right. They were playing games and they were playing watching videos, and like there wasn't anything obscure going on that they knew about. Like you almost
get how he could gain their trust.
Not just that, I get why he eventually gave in to the pills. He was sick. He was sick. And I don't care how talented he was and all the records he broke in the music industry.
Right.
He shouldn't have a legacy of that. He should have a legacy of being the sick, perverted man that he was.
This is why Oprah should be on our podcast. So Oprah.
Oh, sure. We'll put in a call.
the other thing that she said too was that, you know, especially cause they are getting a lot of hate, you know, from people that are saying like, well, you said all these wonderful things about him and stuff. Like, right. He could be a very nice, generous person that did a lot of like wonderful things for people, and he did this, and both of those things can be true.
Right, they're not like, mutually exclusive.
Right, that's it. That's and I was like, man, does Oprah listen to our podcast? Well, because we talk a lot about how two things can be true, but she was like, right, it can be true that they love this person and he did lots of wonderful things for them, and he also sexually abused them, and both of those things can be true at the same time.
Yep.
Like I said, I think in his own sick, fucked up way, I think he loved them. I think in his own head, he didn't think he was hurting them. Although some of it did because he made them promise not to tell and promise all these things. Right. But in his own weird, twisted, disgusting way, he, because they were really the only, when he was with the one boy, like even the mom said it, he had like one boy every 12 months. So that one boy kind of got all of his attention for those 12 months. Like he was completely, and look at the Catholic Church. Okay. The Catholic Church, they own over $1 trillion of real estate and holdings. All right. They feed a ton of homeless people. They work with abuse survivors. They own a ton of hospitals. They do a lot of good in the world, and they still are a fucked up, hateful organization in some aspects. Two things can be true at the same time. You can be a devout Catholic and realize that them ignoring sexual abuse for decades is wrong and gross. Yeah. And you can still appreciate all of the work they do with the homeless population. Like, that's why I get so sick of the black thing. Life is much more complicated than black and white. Right. Like there's people aren't 100% good. They're not 100% evil. They're a mix of both. And I'm actually glad. And you're right. These guys are taking a ton of like, oh, you know, why didn't you come out sooner? Blah, blah, blah. But I think if people actually watched it, you get it. Mm-hmm. These boys, these men now, when they're talking about him, even now, even when they realized what he has done and realized the parts and pieces of their childhood he's stolen, they still talk about him with love.
They do.
It's incredible to watch them actually almost cry at the thought of his death because they loved him. It's bizarre. And it was hard for me to get through. I wanted to turn it off many times.
Me too.
Especially when he was talking about him putting his man-sized penis in a 7-year-old boy's mouth. I looked down at my little 8-month-old son. He was asleep. And I was like, I would fucking kill someone. Like I would rip them. Right. I will go to jail for 100 million years if someone were to do that. So that's when you realize, no, he's a monster. He's a monster.
It's interesting too. And I don't know how much they went into this in the documentary because obviously in the interview, they're like asking them, you know, questions about the actual movie coming out and that sort of stuff. But the filmmaker did say he did two private screenings for the family of each of the men. And Wade seems to be a little bit further along in his sort of process of like forgiveness and stuff. And he was talking about like, you know, they asked if he had forgiven his mom, and he said he was working on it because forgiveness is a path. It's not a, you know, destination, but he was working on it. And if he forgived Michael, and he said kind of the same thing, but the other guy was saying like, no. And he felt like his mom was upset with him for not saying that he forgives her like in the documentary. And he said, like, I'm not there yet. Like, I am in a lot of therapy and I'm trying to figure out how to even talk to her about things. But she watched the movie and she made them skip the part where they detailed like the actual like sexual acts, because she couldn't even listen to them describe. Like, again, yeah, I mean, like, she was groomed too. And that's got to be an awful position to be in. Like, the amount of damage that was done. And even he said, like, the reason he did this is he just wants to try to move on, to try to heal, to try and be a good parent to his children. And he is always going to be dealing with this, like, for the rest
of
his life.
How do you not?
Yeah.
It took up the majority of his adolescence.
Yeah. And then I walk into my dance studio and it's covered in posters of Michael Jackson, and it's like,
well, yeah, you might,
you know, it's just like, about right, down. Like, you can have great music and still have done horrible things and not be a good role model.
Right.
Ugh. It's hard to get through, though. It's worth it, because I think it's what these men have to say is important, especially as a warning to parents and children. And but the graphic dialogue in it is, and you can see it on their, like, I was reading some of the reviews and people saying, I don't believe them. When you watch them talk, I don't know how you cannot, like, you can see how pained they are even discussing this, and embarrassed ashamed. Mm-hmm. Because I think as victims, you probably carry a certain amount of guilt, like, you let it happen too, especially because they defended him in court when it first came out. Like,
Wade defended him.
Yeah.
Like, for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how many things, just from you guys telling me about this, how many things go hand in hand with abuse from Abducted in Plain Sight.
Yes. Yeah, so the
parents letting the kids sleep in an adult's bedroom, or vice versa, the parent guilt, the person, the abused person being in love with their abuser or loving their abuser. So many things that they're not even realizing that they've been abused until they're adults, and they, you know, somebody else tells them, really, and they're like, wait a minute. You know, so many things that go hand in hand. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely watching it.
Well, and it's like, it's that whole, we've talked about it on here before too, it's that power dynamic too. Like, you're talking about the biggest pop star on the planet, like, hands down. And it's not the same thing, but even when you look at these teachers who are, you know, 27, 28 years old, sleeping with these 14-year-old boys, that is a power dynamic that you're being abused, because you're not equals. You're just not. The person who's being abused is seeking acceptance, love, adoration, something from this person who has the ability to give it. And the key point is take it away. Right. Like, Michael Jackson popped in and out of their lives, making them the center of his world for whenever he needed them, and then disappearing and leaving them on the hook, and sometimes destroying their dreams. Like, these kids would sit at the phone and wait for hours for him to call them, because they just wanted that little bit of love for him to,
it's so gross. Anybody telling you at any age that they love you and that you're the best, it makes you feel good, because you feel special.
Well, especially if you're an aspiring dancer, like, to have Michael Jackson in the height of the 80s tell you, you're going to be the next big thing. Here, I'll personally coach you. I'll introduce you to all these people. Come on stage with me. How do you not fall in love with him?
And part of that makes me sad too, because, like, what he stole from him, because Wade Robson is a talented, talented guy. And I just kind of wonder what his career would have been like if it hadn't sort of been interrupted by this much scandal and that much trauma and stuff, because he really is a super, super talented choreographer.
Do you think it would have been a a better career or a less notorious career?
I think it would have been better. And okay. I think he wouldn't have gotten that same start when he was super, super young.
Right.
But I feel like after those sort of formative years, like as an adult trying to work as a choreographer, I think because he was, you're in that weird situation if you've been on every TV show talking about how Michael Jackson was such a great guy and didn't do anything and stuff. I think that hindered his career a lot.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I do want to say those two men are married to two very supportive women.
Yes.
Who, you know, if it wasn't for them, who knows what they would have done to themselves. Like mm-hmm. they picked very good partners to,
yep.
to support them and be with them. And it may take a long time for them to find forgiveness with their families, but I think they have good support systems, you know, in their, mm-hmm. their own lives. And I truly, yep. I don't think they had anything to gain by doing any of this. And I can't believe mm-hmm. the people who are saying that they're doing it for notoriety now, like mm-hmm. watch it and then make up your own right. mind. Cause these men are, they're going to be in this kind of pain forever.
And who wants to be known for that?
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I have a friend too that I asked, like, hey, have you watched this yet? Cause she's super into like the whole dance thing. She's older than me, but she has daughters that are kind of around my age that grew up like in LA dancing and like know a million people. And she said she can't bring herself to watch it because she just wants to still love those songs.
No,
and not
fuck you. Suck it up, princess. Like, everyone needs to watch it.
You can love those songs and still think Billie Jean is a great song and also watch that and be completely horrified.
No, you can't. He should never be played on the radio ever fucking again.
I can't listen to him again. Yeah.
I can separate it out.
I deleted all of his songs out of my library today. No, I was so disgusted by him. Like, and I tried to approach many things with nuance and I couldn't because I would rip someone limb from limb if they touched my,
I'm okay for sure. I think the reason I can disassociate with it is he didn't write those songs.
Don't care. But that's what I don't want anyone getting money every time I play it. Like, I don't want
it. But it's different than like R. Kelly. I don't want to listen to him sing like, how about Age Isn't Anything But a Number?
How can you listen to Bad Now or Thriller and not associate it with what he's done to these boys?
Okay,
like,
in the documentary.
Okay, watch the documentary and let me know if you can still listen to his music.
Hold on. Did he talk about how he was afraid as a child that Michael Jackson would turn into the werewolf from the Thriller video?
No.
He talked about that on Oprah. And if that is not a metaphor for the whole situation, that every time he went over there and he spent the night, he was afraid Michael Jackson would turn into the werewolf from Thriller.
The fact that Michael Jackson had him believing that if he came forward, he would go to jail the rest of his
yes.
life was, and when yes. I heard him describe what it was like to feel Michael Jackson reach over in bed and touch his 7-year-old penis, I can never listen to another Michael Jackson song. I just can't. I cannot. Like that. Everyone should watch it. I don't care if it makes you uncomfortable. That's
it
life.
It does, too. It will. Yeah. I was glad it was in two parts because I needed a break.
Yeah, and you know what? If it makes you uncomfortable, congratulations, you're a fucking yep. human being.
Exactly.
Like, it should make you uncomfortable, you yes. asshole. Listen, yes. watch it. All right. How's everyone's wine?
It's way better now that I have a junior mint taste out of my mouth.
Mine is excellent. I knew it would be. It's been good every sip.
Feels kind of strong, which is delightful. It explains a lot about when we went wine tasting too.
You keep making excuses. Yeah.
No, but it's good. I love a rosé and I don't like ones that are sweet, so this is like right up my alley.
My favorite part after we went wine tasting when I was there a few weeks ago was Stacy got on her like bank account the next day and she could track the wine. She's like, I just kept buying more and more expensive bottles of
That's what happens when you wine taste.
You're fancier the drunker I got. I bought like a $40 bottle of something at the last place we went to, and I don't remember being there the whole time.
Yeah.
I remember they had good hummus, and I was like, I don't even know who paid for
it. And the funny thing is, that was a cider place. It wasn't even a wine place.
And if you dragged us there, we didn't even want to go there.
Right, but then we went there last, so that seems like a bad choice, because I didn't get And not to mention the fact that, like, I was clearly pretty drunk. And what? They weren't doing tastings. Somebody let me order a flight.
Okay, first of all, you're a grown up. Don't try to be like, oh, somebody, you're a grown up.
I'm just saying. So now I have this great fancy collection, increasingly fancy collection of wine. Try on the podcast.
I'm telling you, I tried telling Kai, Stacy's husband, let's just put Apothic in all her bags. Tell her we don't know what happened and keep the wine.
Well, and the funny part is, like, I'm super afraid of opening champagne. I don't like the pop. It makes me nervous. So I had a bottle of, it wasn't from, well, I have a bottle of, like, sparkling rosé from somewhere we went, that probably that last place. But then I had another one I tried to open, and I was like, I can't do it. I have to have someone else do it for me, so.
I'll take one for the team. Next time I'm there, I'll open it for you.
Okay, thank you. I love opening champagne.
Right? It's something like celebratory about it.
I am so afraid it's going to shoot me in the face, even though I have it at a perfect 43 angle. I can't do it.
You're an
odd
duck.
I shoot it out my side door now towards like the pig pen. So now I just have.
You have a towel. You just put a towel over it.
I have cork all over my side yard.
I have a 45 degree angle. I do the whole thing and I get so scared that I can't do it.
Do you know 40 people a year die from champagne corks to the temple?
That's why I shoot them out the side door. They're out in that like, half acre over there.
If there was a more appropriate way for me to go, I could not pick it.
I promise you, if you die from a champagne cork, we will honor you. In the best way possible. I don't know how, but I promise it'll be epic. Yeah. Who has, Georgia, how's your whiskey?
I am on drink number 2 and I have this much left.
For those of you that can't see, it's like an inch.
Very little. I've got like 3 swallows left and I'm out.
Nice. Okay. Why don't, Georgia, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you, where they can buy your books, where they can keep up with you?
I have a website, which is very easy to remember. It is georgiabeers.com. I am on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. I have a Tumblr account, but I don't get Tumblr. I don't do anything on it. It's just there.
I don't think anyone goes on Tumblr now that you can't.
Oh my God, I don't understand it.
It was a porn site? Georgia, you have something on a porn site?
I do?
Tumblr used to not have like adult guidelines or whatever, and so Tumblr used to have like a ton of porn on
it. That's true. I've seen.
And then they changed it. Now I don't think anybody goes on Tumblr anymore.
I found out Twitter doesn't either. After I started following what's his name? Leave Britney Alone. What's his name?
Oh, I forget.
Chris Crocker. Yeah, I started following him, and I'm like, apparently Twitter has no rating at all.
I learned that about Twitter because somebody was telling me about this guy who has a Twitter, and he has 2 penises.
I'm sorry, and what? You're going to have to.
Double-decker, there's like a little one. There's like a, well, not little, but it like, let's just be honest, a regular size one. And then like a bigger one, and they're one on top of the other. And I forget what he calls himself, like double dick something. And somebody was like, yeah, it's a thing, and sent me his Twitter. And I was like, first of all, what? Second of all, why is this on Twitter? Third, why is he posting pictures of it on Twitter?
Wait, hold on.
For anybody that's interested, we're going to find out what this is.
Yeah.
Talk about it on the next
you
podcast.
Can't just,
what the hell?
You can't just say something like that and be like, there's a guy with 2 penises.
I don't know his name, though. You
yeah.
Google it.
They're like regular size or larger. Everyone wants to look at that now. Are you looking it up? Okay.
Oh, good. I have to do an edit because last time we were on, I said Mary Stromberg and it's Mary Bergstrom. And I sounded like an idiot. So I just wanted to clear that up. It's Mary Bergstrom that has the famous Canadian pottery lady. Just so everybody knows. Yeah, correction. I've been wanting to say that. Like all week I was so stressed out. I was like, I can't believe I said that on the last
podcast. It's okay. We still got a new advertiser. So it obviously didn't affect them.
Okay, it's double dick dude.
Of course it is.
Well, that's original.
Like what?
He's articulate. What can you think?
Like, okay, honestly, if you were born with 2 penises, you could put a little more effort into naming yourself. Like you could get a better Twitter handle than that. Like that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
See? There you go, right there. You're welcome.
Ridiculous.
I remember this completely wrong. They are next to each other. They are side by side.
Oh, I was gonna say top and bottom might be actually kind of that might be beneficial. That's useful.
Do you want to see them?
Yeah, of course. What do you mean? Do we? Oh my God!
I can't. They're big. I remember this wrong. He's not circumcised on either of them. I feel like, hey, listen, Double Dick Dude, if you're listening, we talked about circumcision not that long ago. If you could go ahead and get one of those circumcised and then have sex with both of them individually and then tell us if you didn't feel as much.
Honey, guys don't listen to our podcast. No, we have zero men that listen to our podcast. That's horrific.
So I take it back. They're giant.
Yeah.
And yeah. Side by side.
Yeah.
I feel like that can't be real.
Right.
That's what I was thinking.
No, it's
like, why does he have that tie around it then? Like, what's he hiding with the tie? His strap on? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Does he have a strap going around his waist?
I don't know. It certainly doesn't.
Why would you make them uncircumcised?
Right. Okay.
Why wouldn't you do one of each?
On Twitter, 25-year-old bi guy with diphthalia. Best known for my Reddit.
Why is that what you're best known for? Is that you're best known for your Reddit thread?
From a bi dude with two huge cocks.
Oh my god. This is what we're talking about next episode.
I think it's fake.
You could put all kinds of stuff on Twitter. Because looking at his Twitter.
All right.
I am. Yeah.
So, if you're not interested in two-dicked men, you can find Georgia.
Not where they are.
Wherever that guy is, she's somewhere completely different.
I am somewhere far away.
We're not going to put that on our Facebook page, but feel free to Google it.
He retweets a lot of hot meat market posts.
I'm sure. Sounds like a good guy.
Oh my lord.
All right. Well, that's it for us this week.
And on that note.
Thanks for listening. Georgia, thank you for being on with us and
I had a blast. You guys are so much fun.
Tolerating our shenanigans.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, everybody. Have a great week. And we'll be back at our normal day and time next Friday. Until then, hope Monday doesn't kick your ass. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacey, the political princess.
Oh, Georgia.
Bye.